Welcome, dear listeners, to a world that lies beyond the realm of the ordinary, where the mysterious and the unexplained converge. Prepare yourselves for an audio journey that will send shivers down your spine and make your heart race. Welcome to Chillers and Thrillers, the paranormal podcast that delves into the darkest corners of the unknown and where the shadows hold secrets. Hello and welcome to Chillers and Thrillers, the paranormal podcast where I read true stories of people's encounters with the strange and unexplained. No comedy, gore, or skepticism, only 100% true spooky tales. The ringing of a telephone with an unknown caller has become a standard horror movie trope, and there's definitely something eerie about a silent house with a ringing phone. But it's no surprise that the other world could use telephones as a conduit for communication when we consider how a telephone works. At the most basic description, the sound waves from our voices are carried and turned into electrical energy. When we consider that the paranormal is also a matter of energy, then of course they would use one of the easiest conduits to make themselves known. In today's episode, I'll be telling true, chilling stories of people who received calls from beyond. So get comfortable, turn down the lights, and listen in. 911 calling, submitted by user Indiana Joan. This took place when I was about 10 years old. My mom had rather quickly filed for divorce, but she only had a part-time job and made very little money, so finding a place to stay that was affordable and available immediately was tough. A friend of hers told her that she and her husband had a little mobile home that was currently sitting empty, and we could rent it practically for free until we figured out something else. I immediately didn't like the house. Part of this, I'm sure, was due to my parents' abrupt divorce and having my life turned upside down. But it was also just the house itself. We lived in a mountain town, and this mobile home was way up a steep, mile-long driveway. Beautiful pine trees surrounded it. But the house itself looked abandoned and out of place. It had two bedrooms and two bathrooms, so my brother and I shared a room, and my mom took the bedroom with the attached bathroom. It was a very 1970s home, with wood paneling and dated fixtures. There were also areas that showed strange damage, like holes in the wall that were badly patched up. For whatever reason, I immediately refused to use the hallway bathroom. I couldn't even step into it. My mom never really asked me why or questioned it, but she let me use her bathroom. Anyway, my mom was gone a lot trying to find whatever work she could, so I would be home a lot after school and on the weekends. Each time I received the calls I'm about to refer to, I was by myself. My mom always told us not to answer the door, but we should always answer the phone in case it was her. So when the phone rang one afternoon, I figured it would be my mom, since no one else really had her number. There was a woman on the phone who sounded very concerned. "Hello, this is 911 returning your call. We received your call, but we got disconnected," the woman said. I immediately got a sick feeling. I told her that I did not call 911, and she asked if there was anyone else in the house who might have called. I said I was home alone, but I started to get really worried that maybe I wasn't. She said she would dispatch police to our address just to make sure everything was okay. At that point, I was terrified to be in the house, so I sat outside and nervously waited for the police, who showed up in about 15 or 20 minutes. The officer asked me if I had called 911, and I said no. But they claimed I had called them. The officer just sort of shrugged and said, "This kind of thing happens sometimes. They say that it can't, that the numbers can't get mixed up, but it happens." He did a cursory glance around the outside of the house and left. I tried to convince myself that the officer was right. It was just a mixed up phone call, and hopefully whoever did actually call got the help they needed. About a month later, the same thing happened. I got another call from 911 saying they have received a phone call from my number. I told them again that it must have been a mistake. The woman on the phone scolded me a bit, telling me that 911 wasn't something to play around with and I was preventing people from getting help. She didn't dispatch any police this time. Again, I was really worried someone was in the house, so I cautiously checked and made sure all the doors were still locked. I don't know why, but I always kept the hallway bathroom door closed. Maybe because of the eerie feeling I got from it. As I was checking the house, I just knew someone was in that bathroom. It was terrifying. Part of me felt like I needed to open the door to check, maybe to prove myself wrong, but I was too afraid. So I just sat in the living room, watching that door. It was so quiet in the house that after a few minutes, I swore I started to hear faint little sounds coming from inside, like a kind of shuffling noise. I asked my mom to check the bathroom when she got home, and she quickly looked inside. She made me come and look to see that it was empty, and I was letting my imagination get the better of me. The 911 calls happened 3 more times over the coming months, and only when I was home alone. The 4th time, the dispatcher told me I could face criminal charges for what I was doing, and they would contact my parents. I hung up the phone sobbing and terrified. I had the feeling like someone was in the house again, but if I called 911, they probably wouldn't even show up. I felt like the girl who cried wolf, only it wasn't me. It was like someone was playing a horrible, twisted joke on me. I sat and watched the bathroom door again, hearing noises like someone dragging their fingers across the door. I decided my mom was right, and I was probably just letting my imagination get away with me. I decided to try and leave the bathroom door open so I wouldn't get freaked out by the thought that someone was in there. Then I got the 5th 911 call. This time though, after I hung up the phone with the dispatcher, the bathroom door slammed shut. I ran all the way down our steep driveway and found a place to wait until my mom pulled into the drive. When she arrived, she was angry with me for leaving the house, but she saw how upset I was. I think maybe she thought I was acting out due to the stress of the divorce. I refused to be alone in that house again, so we worked it out so I would stay later at school or go to a nearby friend's house until she got off work. Not long after this, we got a notice from my mom's friend that we needed to move out of the house because her mom needed a place to stay. I was so grateful to be moving out. I told my mom she needed to tell her friend that something was wrong with that house, but my mom thought that was a ridiculous way to pay back someone's generosity. I moved around a lot the next few years and tried to forget about that house. It wasn't until I was older that I really thought about it. I witnessed an accident and had to call 911, and the fear and paranoia all came flooding back. I decided to do some research, which, honestly, I wish I had never done. A few years before we moved in, a woman was killed in that house in some kind of domestic dispute. It was days, though, before she was found, locked in the bathroom. Room 9325. Submitted by user DISLP38. I used to work the graveyard shift at the front desk of a luxury hotel. I have several stories of haunted rooms, but this is the best one I have for this particular job. One night, around 10 p.m., the swing shift managers were still there, and I was manning the back office telephone, answering guest questions. The phone rang from room 9325. This is odd, I thought, because at that time, all the rooms in Building 9 had been stripped down for rehab. There was not even a chair left in those rooms, and the entire building was barricaded by 6-foot-tall construction walls. I answered the phone, and it was silent on the other end. I hung up and informed my managers, and they decided to go out to the building and make sure that no one was in the building for safety reasons. They came back 20 minutes later. Nothing, but they were scared out of their minds. They go home after 11 and my phone rings again. Same room, same silence. This time I have to contact the duty manager, or the only manager in charge of the resort that night. He's a housekeeping manager and I tell him what's up. He calls security and his houseboy to go up with him. I get a phone call from him a few minutes later. "Hey, I'm coming down. Get the crisis keys." The crisis keys are the only hard keys we have that unlock the deadbolts on the doors when guests have locked themselves into their room. He gets the keys, and 30 minutes later when he returns, he says that when he arrived at the room with security, the door was deadbolted and the connecting room was shut. He set a security host outside the door and the houseboy by the connecting door while he came to get the keys from me. When he returned with the keys and unlocked the deadbolt, he tried to open the door but couldn't because it was like someone was holding it closed on the other side. Finally, the door gave way and slammed open to an empty room. Nobody had been in the room. Sarah's mother. Submitted by user Beth Dibbler. My aunt worked at a major newspaper in the early 1990s. Her colleague Sarah had an elderly mother who lived alone. The mother lived about 90 minutes away, close enough for comfort but far enough to limit frequent visits. Sarah's mother had medical problems off and on but was independent enough to live alone. However, her mother was petrified that she would die alone at home and that her body would go undiscovered for days or weeks. She voiced this worry often, each time she talked to Sarah in person or over the phone. One day while at work, Sarah received a phone call from her mother. Her mom wasn't feeling right and asked Sarah to come over. Sarah went immediately, but when she let herself into the house, she found that her mother had passed. The police were called and medical personnel came to collect the body. At one point, a police officer came over to Sarah. "Sorry for your loss. It was good that you happened to come check on her." "She called me to come over," said Sarah. The police officer tilted his head. "When?" "About 4 hours ago." Looking both puzzled and a bit alarmed, the police officer said slowly, "I'm afraid that's not possible. She's been dead for over a day." Sarah's mother had died alone, but had made sure her worst fear did not come true. The Professor, submitted by user Library Ann again. My husband and I live in a small, unincorporated town on the outskirts of a bigger city. Although we are almost 50 years old, we are 30 to 40 years younger than any of our neighbors. Most of them have grandchildren who visit regularly and drive them wherever they need to go. Not so for the man I usually just called Professor. His wife Elena had died 12 years prior. I only knew her briefly, but she and the Professor were one of those life goals kind of couples. I loved spending time with them. They were both so witty and clearly deeply in love. Elena's passing hit her husband hard. For the last year, he had been battling cancer. With no bus service in a rural area and cabs from town, an expensive, long wait, I ended up driving him to the doctors often. The Professor had been American since his 20s, but he still retained a charming accent. My name he pronounced as Ani. Usually when he phoned me, he would say, "Good afternoon, Ani." Sometimes he would call in the wee hours in pain, only able to gasp, "Ani." I would drop the phone and run to his house to help him with his meds or take him to the city's emergency room. He was adamant about not staying away from home. He knew the end was near and he wanted to go in his own bed. On October 1st, at almost 4 a.m., my cell phone rang, showing the Professor's number. When I answered, a strange voice asked, "Ani?" "Yes," I answered. "Professor?" "No," the voice giggled. "This is Maria. I'm taking him tonight." Then I woke up. I was sitting up in bed with the phone in my hand. My husband and our dog were sleeping soundly, so the phone hadn't really rung. Had it? I started to call the Professor, but if he was managing to get some sleep, I didn't want to disturb him. So I got up and dressed quietly, and the dog and I slipped out the backyard. I could see the Professor's house from there. No lights were on, and everything was quiet. I wasn't comfortable, though, so I went ahead and dialed. 25 rings, no answer. dear, I knew it. I went back in and woke my husband. We walked to the house and knocked. Nothing. We had to phone the sheriffs. They broke in. The professor had passed, seemingly peacefully, in bed. Many of the chores which would fall to professionals in an urban area are taken up by neighbors here. So that evening, with a deputy supervision, the families on our blocks began to sort through the professor's papers. We needed the deed to his burial plot and any kind of will or link to distant relations. I looked through a small scrapbook of old photos that was on his nightstand. There was no cousin Marco from the old country or nephew Bob, 1997. It was mostly pictures of Elena and the professor, and their never-spoken-of young daughter, Maria, who had died in Oaxaca in 1971. Grandpa's Call, submitted by user Worthless Commotion. My grandpa died when I was 9. We called him a very unique name for grandpa that is actually a different language, his native language. He had a sister who was much, much older than him and who was still living at the time of his death. She was in her mid-90s, still lived at home by herself, and was very active for her age. This story takes place in the late 90s, when dial-up internet was all that was available in our area. We had a separate phone line for the internet. My siblings and I were home alone while our parents were at work. We had a massive pit bull who was an absolute baby to us, but super protective over us kids. We lived literally in the middle of nowhere, surrounded by woods and farms. This was about a month or so since my grandpa had passed. I was messing around on the internet, but kept getting kicked offline. No one had that phone line number. We didn't even know the number. Suddenly, our dog starts to lose his mind outside. Barking, growling, snarling, just completely out of his mind. But no one was there. At that same time, the internet disconnected again, and the phone started ringing. After several minutes, I answered it. The following conversation happened. Horrible static the entire time. Hello? Hi. Who is this? It's your grandpa. And in this, he said his foreign language name with the pronunciation correct. At this point, the dog is still going wild. I'm freaking out. And then the caller says, tell your mom to check on your aunt. I said, okay, I love you, Grandpa. And the caller said, I love you too. Then the line goes dead. I immediately called my mom at work and tell her exactly what just happened. She was still grieving the loss of her father and kind of just brushed it off. A few days later, my aunt's neighbor, who checks in on her regularly, called my mom to let her know that my aunt had fallen in her home and had been on the floor with a broken hip for several days. How many days? The exact number since the day my grandpa called and told us to check on her. The Bookstore, submitted by user Chip Skylark for Life. The strangest, most inexplicable thing that's ever happened to me happened only a few months ago. I was briefly working a job at a college bookstore where one of my tasks was to call customers that had ordered books that were out of stock and let them know we had received their books. I'd already called a large number of customers that day and was in the groove of it. I had the process figured out. You either called and got an answer where you had a script to tell them about their book, or you got the answer machine and had a slightly different script to give. Simple enough. Until I called one number and got neither. Just silence. It threw me off a little, and I just hung up after a few seconds. I called back again. This time, I heard what sounded like someone picking up and quietly listening. But for some reason, I held my tongue and just listened too. I could hear sounds, like people faintly talking in the background. Then I heard a quiet, "Hey, how can I help you today?" A man responded something along the lines of, I need to pick up my book. I was confused for a split second until my coworker, standing near me behind her desk, suddenly says, "Hey, how can I help you today?" She's speaking to a customer, a man, who tells her, "I need to pick up my book." Suddenly, I get goosebumps. I listen for a few moments more. On the line, I hear their conversation, but about a second before it's actually happening, I hang up, walk out from behind the desk, and say to my coworkers, "I'm going on a break." My break consisted largely of me sitting on a table outside and silently wondering what had happened. I didn't do phone calls for the rest of the day and never told any of my coworkers. Chip, submitted by user ShamrockNJ44. My husband Joe and I were married 10 years when our phone rang in the dead of night. I picked it up and I could hardly hear the person, but I did hear him say, "This is Chip. Is Joe there?" Then the line went dead. I had no idea that my husband used to have an imaginary friend named Chip when he was a kid until I told him about that phone call. There were only landlines then and no displays of where the call came from. We were certainly creeped out for a while. The basement phone, submitted by user Jean of Jogon. I used to work in a building that had 3 levels of sub-basements, with the piece of lab equipment I typically worked on in the lowest basement. I had the only key. There was a wired phone in there, and I did work late some nights, but not this night. I was sleeping alone in my apartment when I woke up to a call on my cell phone from my girlfriend at 3 a.m. She was in hysterics and asking why I had scared her. Apparently, she received a call from that basement phone just a minute earlier, with someone who sounded like me slowly repeating her name until crackling and fading out. My apartment was 10 miles away from work. I thought she was lying, but I saw the 3 a.m. call from the basement phone logged on her cell myself. It still freaks me out to this day. An impossible 911 call, submitted by user Sensical. I'm a psychiatric RN. My first job was in a small, 35-bed psych hospital in California. It used to be a medical facility where surgeries were performed and, of course, people died. A couple of stories happened there. First off, whenever I'd work the night shift, I'd sometimes get a phone call from the local police station asking if everything was okay. Sure, everything was fine. All the patients were asleep and it was just a normal night. The police then said that they received a 911 call from our hospital, and the extension from where the call was made was the arts and crafts room. Nobody goes in there at night, not even staff. It's always had a creepy vibe and used to be where surgeries were performed. The caller, identifying herself as Satana, was asking for help. This would happen about once a month or so. Night shift didn't have much staff, so as a supervisor, I knew where all my staff was because I would be the one to help relieve them during breaks. I know with 100% certainty that no staff or patients were the ones calling 911. I know it wasn't a patient because psych hospital doors are locked, and to get to that room, a patient would have had to cross 3 barriers of passcode-protected doors. At other times, our PA system would turn on randomly, usually around 10 p.m., and you'd hear breathing and beeping machines. None of our equipment beeped. One time in particular, the PA turned on, and you could hear what sounded like a kid speaking, but the content of what was said couldn't be made out. Then it stopped, then started again, and then you could hear what sounded like an outgoing call playing through the PA. This was impossible to do because to activate the PA, you pick up a phone and dial 77. Once you do that, you lose a dial tone and cannot make an outbound call. So anyway, the PA played an outgoing call for hours. Yet not a single phone was ringing in the hospital, so we weren't sure what was happening, let alone how. It finally stopped around 6 a.m. and our patients were ticked off. Imagine trying to fall asleep to that. To this day, nobody knew how that happened, and the technicians we called out at the time thought we were pranking him. The repeating call, submitted by user, "Hey, I'm Vince." I came home one day and my mom was freaking out because the phone was apparently repeating everything that the speaker on the opposite end of the line was saying. I looked at my mom like she was crazy and decided to see what was going on myself. I called my grandma and started to talk to her. And here's how the dialogue went. This convo was in Chinese, so here's a translation. I said, "Hey, Grandma, how are you doing?" "Oh, hi, Vince. I'm doing great. So your parents are coming to Hong Kong. Make sure you lock the door to your house before you sleep at night." "Yeah, Grandma, I know." The rest of the conversation is unimportant, but basically she asked to speak to my mom. "Okay, bye, Grandma." "Vince?" "Yeah, Grandma?" "I'm doing great. So your parents are coming to Hong Kong. Make sure you lock the door to your house before you sleep at night." At this point, I'm kind of freaked out. Basically, the whole conversation kept looping around and around until I hung up. Apparently, my grandma told us later that the whole time her phone had been disconnected. There might be a technical explanation for this, but it was very creepy at the time. Unexplained 911 calls, submitted by user Voluntary Scotsman. At our department, we had fairly strict policies regarding how we handled 911 calls that were either misdials or dead air. We always sent two officers out to the address to ascertain why and how the call was made. Our state had a database of this information and put out statistics every year on this information. Additionally, it was a fairly useful deterrent against the kids who loved prank calling and the old folks who called dispatch just to have someone to talk to. Like I stated before, we were a fairly small county. This particular case involved some fairly strange 911 calls in a newer subdivision in our county. Shortly after I began working as a deputy in early 2001, a real estate developer began to build expensive housing in a newly cut subdivision that ran against one of the larger creeks in our county. Seemingly overnight, a huge wooded area turned into $500,000 plus housing. At night, myself and another deputy would go on foot patrol through the new subdivision. It was a way to kill time on slow nights and another way to fulfill our curiosity about how big these houses really were. However, there was one larger Victorian-style two-story house that overlooked the river that we typically did a quick patrol through and got the hell out of there. I could never put my finger on it, but I always had a feeling of uneasiness when we walked on the property and through the home as it was under construction. The other deputy, a good friend of mine, always told me the shadows were watching him when we walked through that house. We jokingly called the house Marilyn Manson's crib. We never felt weird in any other location in the subdivision. Months passed and most of the subdivision was complete by early summer. People began to move in and all shifts at the sheriff's department began to patrol the area. However, the house I felt strange in had seemingly come to a construction standstill. From talking to the general contractor, the real estate company had three potential buyers for the home, but they all backed out for various reasons. Now, this was not uncommon due to the high prices and uncertainty over property taxes, but something in my mind just didn't add up. After speaking to some of the subcontractors involved, it seemed like the potential buyers toured the property and got the hell out of the deal as quickly as possible. Around December 2001, a buyer was finally found for the house, but the closing had to be delayed to finalize some utility issues in the area. About 2 weeks before the new owners closed on the home, our dispatch received a 911 call from the home with dead air. I was on shift that night and took lead while another deputy headed my way. I went over to our secondary radio channel and began asking a ton of questions to our dispatchers about the nature of the call. All she could advise was that she was getting dead air, the callback number was showing all sixes, as in 666, 666, 6666, and the address was showing to be the creepy house in the new subdivision. I found this quite odd, as the general contractor sent our department the house numbering for this particular street a couple of days before the call. I figured our dispatch supervisor had updated our 911 system to reflect these new addresses. When I rolled up on the house was completely dark. I stayed in my patrol vehicle and hit the house with my spotlight while I waited for backup to arrive. Nothing was found out of the ordinary, and no signs of vandalism were discovered. However, the entire time I was there, I felt a heaviness that I could only describe as someone pushing down on my shoulders and weighing me down. We closed the call out as unfounded. After we cleared, I let our patrol sergeant know what was going on. He felt that it was an error with the 911 system and stated we needed to inform the day shift dispatch supervisor. The next morning, I notified our dispatch supervisor about the error and was met with a perplexed look. She proceeded to tell me this was impossible because the utility company had not ran phone service to any of the houses in that part of the subdivision yet. Apparently, this was the utility issue that was preventing closing for the homeowners. She stated that she was waiting until the end of the week to update the 911 system to reflect the new addresses, as it would be a waste of time to load in new addresses with no telephone service. Thus, the addresses could not have appeared on our computer-aided dispatch system. I believed our dispatch supervisor on her assessment. She had been with the county for 10 years since the 911 system designed and implemented, and generally did a very good job. So I took her at her word, which unsettled me even more. Determined to get to the bottom of the issue, I passed this issue on to the day sergeant and asked if one of the deputies could follow up with the phone company if they're out working near the house. Later that evening, I found a note in my patrol box that stated, "Phone company is working on the lines across the street. Won't be working on that address until late this week. Phone company doesn't know what's causing 911 issue. Maybe dispatch got the address wrong." That night, dispatch received another 911 call with dead air from the same house, seemingly impossible address included. Once again, we responded, and nothing was found out of the ordinary. The deputy that responded with me that night told me afterwards that he felt like he was being watched the entire time we checked the perimeter of the house. I still felt the heaviness when walking around the house. The next morning, the patrol sergeant and I both spoke with the dispatch supervisor and basically told her the impossible was occurring and we needed to get to the bottom of it. She pulled the records from the night before, and sure enough, the impossible address was being sent from some unknown phone lines to our 911 system, which propagated out to the dispatcher operator CAD and our in-car computers. By that evening, we all received an email from the dispatch supervisor stating that she had no idea how this was happening and believed it to be a glitch that she corrected in the 911 system. However, she added the new addresses anyway since the phone company was almost done working in the area. Basically, she had no darn clue what was causing the problem. We started getting nightly 911 calls to the house. Our patrol sergeant finally told dispatch we couldn't be responding until the buyers moved in. In some weird way, this made me feel much better. I absolutely hated responding to that house. The next week, on one of my nights off, I heard on my radio that the patrol sergeant on the differential shift told two deputies to get to the bottom of what was going on at that house. Apparently, he believed that kids were somehow tampering with the phone system and just trying to waste the county's time. Bored and somewhat curious, I called the patrol sergeant on his cell phone and asked if the 911 call came in with dead air, like it had for us multiple times. He said this particular call was downright creepy. He stated dispatch answered the call, and it sounded like someone was either gagged or the phone was completely muffled. Apparently, the person on the other end of the line sounded like they were in distress and sounded like they were talking at a rapid pace. Now, at this point, the new owners still had not moved into the house and, as far as I know, had not connected the phone service. Like all the other times before, the deputies got on scene, checked the perimeter and looked through the house to the best of their abilities and found nothing. However, one of them mentioned feeling unusually cold when walking near the back of the property. I talked with him later, as this was fairly strange since he was the only one who felt it, and our average temperature at night in December hovers a little above 55 degrees Fahrenheit. The deputy who reported the coldness was directed by the sergeant to park in front of the house for a couple of hours to look out for anything suspicious. Apparently, the deputy lasted about another hour and a half before throwing up about 6 or 7 times on the side of the road and took off for the evening. I talked with him about his experience a couple of days later, and he stated he felt fine after he left the area. However, he said the longer he was near the house, the sicker he felt. Anecdotal at best, but it still creeped me out. A few weeks passed. The new homeowners, a husband, wife, and 2 children, moved in and stayed less than 3 months. The house was put on the market at a fairly substantial loss. We received numerous 911 calls from the homeowners, ranging from prowlers in the area to break-ins with a suspect still in the residence. Now the calls were coming from the alarm company instead of the homeowners themselves. Apparently, they installed a fairly high-end security system with motion sensors that called the security company after the owners armed the system in the master bedroom before going to sleep. 8 out of 10 calls we received were for motion sensor activation alarms. I probably responded a total of 20 times in 3 months to the house. I think the alarm company was out there almost as many times, but could never find a defect in the system. The owner was continually traveling for business, leaving the kids and wife at home for the better part of the 3 months they lived there. The wife was absolutely convinced the house was haunted. Now, based on the contact I had with her, I tended to believe her. She was well educated, very articulate, and her description of shadows moving scared the hell out of me, as that was eerily similar to what my friend encountered. Before the family moved, during the last months they were there, our sheriff felt it necessary to send an off-duty deputy to sit outside the residence on more than 3 occasions, just to ease the mind of the wife. Each time, a different deputy was sent. All of them reported feeling strange while on assignment, but no one reported seeing anything suspicious. Since the first family left, the house was owned by at least 12 different families since 2002. We kept getting 911 calls that were either from the alarm company or dead air for as long as I worked at the department. Most owners didn't stay more than a year and a half. I think most of them stayed there long enough to sell the house at a reasonable price to the next poor, unsuspecting buyer. I particularly felt bad for the family who got stuck with the house during the housing crisis of 08 and 09. I can't stress how strange this is, as a majority of the original owners in the subdivision continued to live there, and we rarely got calls to any other house in the subdivision. And that's all for this episode. Have you ever received a creepy phone call from the unknown? I'd love to hear your stories. If you have any to share, please email me at chillersandthrillers@gmail.com. If possible, I'd also love if you could rate and review the show on your preferred podcast provider, and also check me out on YouTube. Thank you for listening. I hope all you ghouls and ghosts stay safe, and I'll see you next time. Thank you for tuning in to Chillers and Thrillers. I hope these spine-tingling tales of the paranormal have kept you on the edge of your seat. I invite you to join us again soon, and please, again, feel free to submit your own scary story or your theories to chillersandthrillers@gmail.com. Until then, stay curious, keep your eyes peeled for the unexplained, and never let the fear of the unknown deter you from embracing the extraordinary.